We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 315 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and he's Emil Evanesian. And Emil, I was all ready to talk about the Ferran Torres stuff, a little bit more on that, maybe a little bit about Pedri's return, maybe even something about the Fabio Blanco signing for Barca B. But that has all been overshadowed by the flip of Ousmane Dembélé's contract situation, the number of COVID absences against Mallorca, a difficult decision by Easy Abde. So before we get to all that stuff, I think, or even Alvaro Morata that we're going to hit today too. So before we hit any of that stuff, how's it going?
Not too bad. So I will say that the latest strain of COVID is it's out there. I recently got out of the health and safety protocols myself, and apparently it's seeped its way into the Barca roster as well. Otherwise things are good.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you're feeling good and you're able at least to do the podcast out of health protocol. So, but yeah, we're unfortunately going to have to talk about COVID later in the show, which, I mean, no person likes to do, especially no one hosting a podcast or whatever. So, but before we do that, we have to talk about one of the players who does have COVID, but that doesn't seem to be the big issue with him at the moment. I feel like we have had, honestly, I feel like we've had the Dembélé talk 1 billion times since this podcast started. And actually, I'm not that far off. Frances and I talked about what Dembélé could bring to Barca way back in episode 27. I looked this up back in August of 2017 when he signed with the club.
Wow.
And I feel like, having listened to part of that, we have not gotten much farther in the conversation, because a lot of that conversation was theoretical and about what he can do and what he's capable of and what he needs to improve upon. And he is very much the same player just 5 years down the line, and I guess a little more refined and a little more guaranteed in what he is, because he is five years down the line. And the reason we talk about him, obviously, if you listen to this podcast, you don't live under a rock, you know, the contract talks apparently have broken down. Maybe we won't be having this conversation much longer. I must say that too. So I just want to quickly go over, Emil, let's start with what we are now being told at time of reporting. So Gerard Romero is at the center of this. He's a Catalan journalist turned Twitch personality. And he has, for the last few seasons, has a very hit or miss record. Let's put it that way. Yeah. But it seems like under the Laporta board, and we'll get to him again with Alvaro Morata, that Romero has regained, because again, some kind of relationship with whoever's in Laporta's board or his entorno, as they say, that Romero has regained some of his credibility. So he reported yesterday that Dembélé's agent was told that Barca could not meet his salary demands, and his agent said that he was only willing to accept those conditions. So that we know is true. That's been confirmed by every journalist everywhere. In Catalonia and beyond. So here's the allegedly parts of that story that seem to be dictating people's opinions and creating discourse here. And that is, one, that his agent is using the Ferran Torres signing and his necessary registration being dependent on Dembélé's renewal, as in Dembélé has to renew, or this renewal they wanted to get done now so that he would lower his salary to get Ferran Torres registered. So the agent is using that as leverage. That seems very plausible to me. Number two is that his camp is frustrated. The club is saying they don't have enough money for Dembélé, but they do want to sign Haaland. And that is abundantly clear, even in those meetings and the project moving forward. And then number three is that the agent and Dembélé are asking for a 40 million euro gross per season salary and a 20 million euro signing bonus, which comes out to about 750K per week. How much validity do you give to those three?
So the first two, I would say relatively high. I mean, I guess they sort of dovetail into one another. So it's Ferran Torres, you know, you guys, after all this time of all this talk of austerity and, you know, there's no money and everything else. So you guys find the money and splash out for Ferran Torres. And all the while, you know, even in these moments where there was apparently no money, the hope of bringing Erling Haaland here was, you know, never abandoned. And I suppose, you know, why would you abandon it? That would be a great thing if you could do it. But the fact that it's still being spoken about as such a feasible option, I mean, I get from his perspective where he might say that, okay, so you guys want me to take a pay cut effectively to finance the acquisition of my replacements or, you know, the guys that you're going to almost instantaneously promote above me. I understand where he might be a little bit put out by that and just say that, you know, so you guys clearly can find this money somewhere. You just don't want to give it to me. So I kind of get that. The last one, the about his salary demands, the 40 million and the two, that sounds outlandish. I mean, that kind of smacks of, if anything, that kind of tells me that, and again, I know nothing, I have no inside information, but it gives me the impression that this thing might really be dead in the water. And it strikes me as, you know, sometimes when a team, when a guy is out the door, the local media or the local friendly media will start planting stories and, you know, stories will come out about either, you know, bad behavior in the past or demands that were made that precipitated the exit. So this strikes me as a lot of that. I mean, that strikes me as like PR wrangling. So the third one doesn't really get me too much. The first two seem eminently plausible.
Well, the only thing about the third one that I do raise an eyebrow as is that it was reported the two clubs connected to him immediately, even as soon as January, if he were to get some kind of release from Barca now, is Manchester United and Newcastle. And in the case of Newcastle over the summer, the 40 million gross salary and 20 million signing bonus might not be something that the Moussa Sissoko, the agent for Dembélé, believes is plausible for Barca, but that might be the counter offer from Newcastle for the summertime that the agent is bringing to the table. And basically saying, hey, if you guys can't deliver the bag to my client, then he's going to get that bag elsewhere. And he's completely entitled to do that. And I always tell every player, I mean, as much as people are popping up with that, the meme of, not meme, but the quote by Johan Cruyff about if you don't want to be a Barca, then, you know, Barca doesn't want you. And Xavi has iterated the same thing in his time.
Yeah.
Barca could go out and use that money, not only to register in the short term, obviously, but they could use that money on Ronald Araujo and Nico and Gabi. It's just unfortunate that Barca does not have the leverage where they either, yeah. I mean, he cannot be an asset. Apparently the club is saying to Xavi that, and this is a big decision that Xavi has to make, again, somebody who said before that he doesn't want someone who doesn't want to play at the club, right? And he said that, and Xavi has said that. But, you know, I don't lose sight of the most important thing this season being finishing top four. So what does Barca have to do to finish top four? And it seems like, I mean, is he willing to go for 10 million euros? Probably not. He's going to probably refuse to be sold for 10 million. And that's the likely the case.
Well, that was the prevailing rumor anyway, just when the negotiations were ongoing, right? It was either there's going to be an extension and he's going to be here beyond this year, or he's just going to wind down his contract and go for free because that's going to secure him the largest pay packet.
And with his injury history, he was only willing. They weren't really, I mean, again, you and I cover the NBA, so you see a lot more with the player autonomy there, that there was no put up or shut up deal on the table. There was no 1 year or 2 year extension for Dembélé. His agent wanted a long-term solution, which tells you the agent may not be totally sold on the player either. And with his health and track record, you can't be, as he's entering his prime. You can't be sold.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and so I think for Xavi, it's fair for him to be divided. I mean, again, so Barca could use some of that flat money other than register, but for Araujo and Nico and Gabi and those extensions, which are, I think, more important than Dembélé's even. But again, I think it's a division. It seems like people with one voice are saying that Dembélé, all right, like, how do you get him out of the club now that he's like denied the renewal? Like, it's over. It's done. Yeah. But I think it stinks. I think it stinks that Xavi is losing one of the potentially most influential wingers of world football when he played for the club. And for the club to lose another asset for free is tough. But in the end, it may be best for all parties involved to move on from this situation and maybe move on as soon as possible. Other than the leverage that Dembele has, I mean, for Barca's sake, at least. Mm-hmm. I mean, Barca won't be trapped in a big contract for a player that has missed more time than he's played, and it's still a question mark durability-wise entering his prime. And to me, I do throw out that if you don't care about the club, this is still a business, and Dembele's agent is right to ask for the moon when Dembele is willing to get the moon, or is able to get the moon from Newcastle. Because if Newcastle is willing to pay for theory, and that's what the difference of these negotiations is, that Newcastle, if they put him on 40 million gross per season, they're paying for, in theory, a really, really great player who's a World Cup winner and could be just world-class winger. But the agent is negotiating the theory and the club is negotiating reality plus their financial reality.
The proven track record. And,
right.
And I mean, the club is also negotiating its own reality. Exactly. I mean, they're negotiating Dembele's reality along with their own. Now, you know,
I'm missed 104 matches. That's reality. I mean, that is reality for Barca to come to the table with.
I mean, that's the thing. It's, you know, when you were talking about the, when you were, you know, kind of introducing the subject, you were talking about how he's a little bit of an involved player. He's a little bit more of a refined player and everything else. And I think there's some truth to that. But at the same time, too, I mean, there's so little, I don't know, like concrete data and concrete track record to grab, and especially of a continuous run of play where he's been healthy, where we can legitimately kind of pin down what he is and where he fits and, you know, different ways that he's been deployed and where they might be better. There just hasn't, and you know, I mean, we've gotten some data points, but there just hasn't been a long run of sustained, healthy, high-level play where we can have a whole lot of confidence saying that this is what this guy is now. His physical attributes and his skills are known and they are considerable, but we don't actually know what the... I mean, what is the proven entity of the player?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Well, I think, unfortunately, the proven entity of the player is good enough to... I mean, that's the question that I'm going to ask you as well. I've been thinking about the question, and you see Twitter polls too, like... should Barcelona and Xavi, if the club wants him to sit in the stands if he's leaving for free and don't utilize that player, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing that would have happened to Ilias Moriba. Would you put him in the stands or would you play him? Because, and I can't think that comes with a caveat that if Dembele is not renewing and reducing his salary now, that means that Ferran Torres will not be registered. And that means that, I mean, we're going to talk about Alvaro Morata next, but that means he probably wouldn't be registered either. And so that means that I think to get top four, you're going to have to play Dembele. And the top four and the ambitions of the club beyond this year, if you want Haaland, you have to finish top four. And if you then to finish top four, you either have to register Ferran Torres or you should probably play a talent like Dembele to finish top four. And it just, yes. It's not going to be advantageous. Like, and I know that like, it kind of spits in the face of, you know, the hard line that the club would like to take on a player leaving on a free. And it feels like the player has won that battle. And I know people don't want Barca to take the L there, but the much larger L, like my care or belief is I want the club to be as good and sustainable and as high succeeding as it can be in the post Dembele era, even next year. And that means that if he's going to hold the club hostage, they're unfortunately going to have to be held hostage to play him to finish top four. Yeah. Cause it's weird. Cause it's like, you're saying, is it Dembele or Haaland? I mean, but the answer is if it's not Dembele, then hopefully it can be Haaland. And you know, it is even weird to think. It is even weird to think about Dembele though. I think this is the final point on Dembele that because it's all theoretical, if you say who fits Xavi's system, Dembele or Haaland, and the way he wants to play, it feels like the, you know, Dembele on paper is actually the player that fits Xavi's system better and Haaland is a bigger question mark. But if you say who makes Barcelona better in the next 5 years, even if Dembele renewed, the answer is Haaland.
It's Haaland. Yeah.
1,000 times every single day. It's of course Haaland makes the club better. He scores almost a goal a game at Borussia Dortmund for the last few seasons. And he's only
so
21.
Young, so smart, so powerful. I mean, he really is just one of these kind of total packages, you know? Yeah. And yeah, I mean, he is, I mean, not quite to the point, you know, okay. So you don't maybe necessarily entirely overhaul the way you play for him, but you can't be dogmatic. If you know, if you're a club that aspires to a certain style of play and Erling Haaland isn't inch perfect, you know, the number nine or the man for your system, you have to give a little. Like the dogma has to crack a little bit to facilitate that. Now, you don't necessarily do that for every player, but I agree that Dembele is in theory the better fit for the way that Xavi wants to play. As far as because I mean if there is no other recourse, if there's no other way to free up the money and the squad spaces and everything to register Ferran Torres, then yeah, I mean you might just have to. I mean, I would say play Dembele. I mean, he's never made any overtures about wanting. He hasn't claimed that he's going to shut it down and not try or tank games or anything like that. So there's no reason to believe that he's not going to be, you know, a decent professional and play to the best of his ability and play out his contract. And I agree because you need to get into the top four. There is no Haaland without the top four. Like, I mean, just the notion that Haaland would want to sign for, even if it is Barca, you know, sort of the grand legacy and the you know, the all the prestige and everything. The notion that Erling Haaland's going to sign for a Europa League team is absurd. I mean, that sort of thing simply does not happen.
Well, if Barca are in the Europa League, not only is he not signing, but he's going to Real Madrid. I mean, that is the higher
right.
Barca is trying to swoop in. I mean, and it's said that it's not even that Laporta is desperate for Haaland, is that Laporta is desperate for Haaland and Mbappe to not go to Real Madrid. And from a marketing perspective, it's just as important to get that the name Haaland on the back of jerseys. It's just essential to Barca's brand. It's essential to the next wave or the next generation of to have that player around all these other, you know, in theory, future superstars. But to your point about what can be done, the immediate problem continues to be that Barca needs to reduce salary to register Torres and Dani Alves. And to get under that the 97 million euro threshold, they're only able to use 25% on incoming transfers then. And that number is just so low. And what I've seen, the only possible thing they have left to play after PK reduces salary very, very little, Dani Alves is basically coming for, I mean, as free as possible. But one of the solutions I saw that may upset people is that there could be, speaking of renewals, a renewal for Sergio Roberto, even injured now, that massively lowers his salary, but does keep him at the club for an extension of 2 years. So that's what I've seen, that they can pretty much, I mean, it means that they can register everybody who will actually play while he's still injured and renew him for a much lower salary because he does make a lot. I think, I mean, of the things that I trust, I think he's making the sixth most or something on the ledger or fifth or sixth most. So, I mean, his salary is quite high.
That whole old guard, like all the guys that were, you know, from the old guard apparently are on good money. I mean, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but yeah, like it's, yeah, he's well paid from what I can gather.
Yeah. And so, I mean, yeah, that means you're stuck with Sergio Roberto. But again, I don't know if the club, especially the Catalans there, believe the same thing, that you're stuck with Sergio Roberto. And especially if you're going to be, as I spoke about on the earlier show this week, if Des is indeed 1 foot out the door already, which I don't need to rehash it, it continues to puzzle me, but I understand how he is a financial asset and the club is looking for what can get things done, what can bring in a Ferran Torres, and who has to be sacrificed for that. Which makes the, now we're going to pivot to the Alfaro Morata stuff. I think we've done Dembélé enough. It seems like, I mean, again, if Gerard Romero does have his credibility back, which he tweets a lot and he does a lot of stuff on Twitch, so that means it is going to be, the circus has begun circling again in all these different towns. So if Romero is someone to be really believed again because he has someone on the inside once more, that a loan to buy for Alvaro Morata from Juventus is actually real. I mean, he scored 7 goals in 23 appearances this year, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what numbers I give you, because everyone in the world knows who Alvaro Morata is. Yes. Everyone who's watched Atletico Madrid or Spain or Juventus. I mean, there is
Chelsea. Yeah.
Right. He is a good striker, and it is tough to find a number 9 in this world, especially, I mean, just a high quality number 9. Mm-hmm. And he just, I think, very much like Olivier Giroud, he has people going, are you a high quality number 9? And he goes, maybe. And then you go, well, you're in our team, so we hope you are. And then he goes, well, am I? And then it's kind of like the,
right? Yeah.
You don't know exactly what you're going to get. But then, Emil, as much as we talk about the hypothetical of him on the field, everything we just talked about Dembélé, how are you going to discuss Haaland if Alvaro Morata is a loan to permanent deal? How are you going to discuss registering Ferran Torres and Dani Alves if Alvaro Morata is coming in January? How is all that possible? It doesn't make sense in my brain.
So Alvaro Morata on the field is interesting. I think you described him really well. Like he has all of the raw materials and the component parts of an elite striker. And the reality of Alvaro Morata is, you know, a good to excellent striker, depending on which run of form you catch him in, I suppose. But the interesting thing with him is, I don't know, I mean, we might just be too far down the road with him to assume that some sort of change of scenery or change of teammates or anything will make it different.
He's 29. He's not young.
No, he's always had this spectacular, I mean, I've always thought of him, he has a fantastic gift for being in the spot where fantastic opportunities fall to him.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to stop the story there because that's on an upswing. But, you know, he's always in a spot where he can score the big goal, or, you know, he's in the right place at the right time. I mean, it's even, I've never rooted for a club that he's played for or anything else. I mean, it's got to be maddening. Just he's so good at like 90% of the job. And so the results are so scattered and middling when it comes to the actual stuffing the ball in the goal. I mean, in the sense, he's not a bad player, but so going to the other part of what you said. So one of the articles that I read, and again, who knows how much truth there is to a lot of this conjecture, but the story said that Xavi has apparently spoken with either Morata's representation or the player himself and said that, you know, this is meant to be a strategic move. This isn't just supposed to be a 6-month loan. And the plan is for Morata to be here long past, you know, I think it said, quote, far beyond the end of this season. I don't understand how that would work if, like you said, the very frequently and loudly reiterated aim is to bring Erling Haaland in. I mean, so you're either, what, you're going to do what the last administration did, bring Morata in, give him a long-term deal, and somehow manage to get Erling Haaland and, what, stash another high-priced dude on the bench or make him a, you know, 20, 30-minute substitute? Or what? I mean, you're just going to ruin this guy's confidence and, you know, if you're going to bring him in, sign him, and then essentially just openly court Erling Haaland. I mean, because one of the other things that every sort of well-written, well-thought-out, and well-sourced article and profile of Murata that I've read is his psyche and his confidence are paramount to how he plays on the field. Yeah. When he doesn't feel appreciated, when he doesn't have that self-assuredness, it becomes like this negative feedback loop. And he starts snatching at chances and it gets worse. And then everyone turns on him and then that gets worse. And so if that's what you're going to do, you're literally doing the thing that is documented to damage this guy's form. Yeah. So I don't know what the plan is in doing that. I mean, in a vacuum, he's a good player. But if you legitimately think you have a chance of getting Haaland in here, you're better off just playing Dembele and hopefully he plays well enough and everyone gets, healthy enough and the team is good enough to secure top four. And then you bid farewell to Dembele and bring Haaland in. But I feel like this Alvaro Morata thing just doesn't fit with anything resembling the talk of the long-term strategy of the club as it's been presented.
Yeah, and it's even with the Ferran Torres deal, and one of the reasons we praised it and the reason I like it is because it feels like Barca said, hey, we didn't have a vision. I mean, Messi was the one who said it over and over himself, that the club doesn't really have a plan right now as far as transfers and players or whatever, even though in theory they're bringing them around me. Mm-hmm. And we obviously saw that with Coutinho and Griezmann and blah, 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 blah. We've done this a million times. Mm-hmm. But it seems like even with the Ferran Torres deal, and the likes of Pedri, the likes of Gabi, and some other day, I might even write an article instead of doing it on the pod about the Fabio Blanco move and the Emery Demir, and even in theory, the Yusuf Demir moves. They all seem to be with an eye, with a plan, with an idea towards this is what we're looking for. This is even the player that we could resell in this position, X, Y, Z. And yeah, the Morata one, I don't put a lot of sense in it where you go, I mean, if you're going to do this and just, Aubameyang is going to be a free transfer in the summertime. So just go after him, or try to figure out if Arsenal wants to part with Lacazette for a small fee, because I think he'll be a free agent like the following year, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like if you're going to get a player from 28 to 32, then just roll the dice in that way. But yeah, his wages are going to be too high, I think, for this to make sense. But yeah, I mean, so I'm not sold on it. I mean,
the rumor there too is apparently he's willing to take, way that I read it was he's willing to take a huge pay cut because he's Atletico's still and he's at Juve, and I guess Juve have no interest. And so, because I guess there's a buy option of 40 million.
Yeah.
That Juve have no interest in triggering. So essentially Juve would be happy because it absolves them of having to make that decision and takes them off of their books. I guess Atletico find a place to put this guy, and he's not just gathering dust on their bench. And
it's doing a service to them. Cause remember, I mean, is Atletico trying to push Barca and saying, hey, if you don't do this deal, you're getting Griezmann.
We won't buy Griezmann.
Right. Yeah. We won't go forward and buy Griezmann. I mean, yeah, that's a huge one for that. But all right. I think Morata, as I said, on the field, I guess as a number nine, I get it.
He's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. He's fine. I mean, the Barca is going to go as far as Fati, and now you add Torres to that equation, Gavi and Pedri and Nico and De Jong and Araujo. As far as those players take Barca's, how far they go, Morata would not be. I mean, even for Spain, he's the number nine, but we've seen he's the eighth most important player on the field, or ninth most important player on the field as far as even getting the ball in the back of the net. He's like sixth on that list.
Yeah.
But he plays a role and he serves a purpose. And I do see how for Luis Enrique Spain, people are also making that connection. For Luis Enrique Spain, if Xavi's Barcelona, which now apparently with Pedri and Busquets and even Sergio Roberto has been the peripheral, and Alba and Eric Garcia, you could quickly see how Luis Enrique Spain and Xavi's Barcelona can look very much in the mirror and feel an Ansu. How did I not mention Ansu either? And we'll get to update.
Yeah, they're totally intertwined. Yeah.
Yeah. But before that, Barca have a match actually before I have the next podcast this weekend against Mallorca. So I have misspoken, and I must be very clear about this. I have misspoken in the past because I live in the US of A, baby, but COVID is different over in Europe. And Emil, you can speak more to what variants are being transmitted there, because here in the US, Omicron is being, it's very transmissible, but it's less deadly here in the US. And so you're seeing the NBA and the NFL are getting decimated by positive tests, but the vaccination rates here are also lower. So the number of deaths here is still higher but positive COVID tests are affecting football everywhere, with vaccination rates being a bit higher in Spain, as in more people getting vaccinated, if that makes any sense. But okay, so what we do know at this point, and again, this is probably going to change the next hour, but Dembele, Umtiti, Gabi, Alves, who can't be registered anyway until the 3rd, when the window opens, Balde, Lenglet, and Alba all tested positive. And then today, Dest, Abde, and Coutinho are added to that list. Busquets is suspended. Braithwaite, Ansu, Pedri, though he could feature on the bench, though, but will not start. But Busquets, Braithwaite, Ansu, Pedri, Roberto, and then before he tests positive for COVID, Dest and Memphis Depay are all questionable, suspended, or carrying an injury that keeps them out. And so for those wondering, will La Liga postpone this match? The overwhelming answer is still very much no. Last year, Granada had like 5 or 6 first team players available. And I think you have to be down to 5 first team players.
I think it's 5. And then you can fill out, you have to fill out the rest with, like, I guess youth players, or I don't even know, like you do the NBA thing where you just find anyone in the neighborhood who can play and just give them a jersey. But like,
right. Yeah. The G League is the same thing as the Segunda Bay, basically.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So that means that Barca currently have 9 players counting Neto. So 8 first team available players to start the match. That leaves Ter Stegen, Neto, Araujo, Pique, Eric Garcia, Mingueza, Frank de Jong, Puig, and Luke de Jong. So I think the starting lineup for Mallorca has completely written itself here. It's probably a 4-3-3 with Ter Stegen, Araujo, Pique, Garcia, Mingueza at the back, Frankie de Jong, Puig, and Nico in the midfield, and then Jukla, Luke de Jong, and probably Ilash Akolmash up top. And I'm not even sure if he can, but maybe Marmol for Mingueza at left back, where Marmol is more comfortable as a natural left back / left center back. And Mingueza, we saw he is not comfortable on that left side. But I also don't think Xavi would hand him, that being Marmol, his debut in that circumstance. But you never know. Nor, though, am I saying that's even legal to happen, since Nico, Jukla, and Ilias would represent the max 3 B team starters, if I did read that correctly. That you can only have 3 maximum first team B team, or 3 B team players can start, unless you have less than the available number.
The under 5 first teamers.
to start. So that's pretty wild. That's pretty wild.
I think that's why there's the massive push to redo Nico's contract and register him in the first team.
This proves that Nico and Gabi's renewals and first team registration is paramount now.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, these things are so tough to talk about, because, I mean, it's even, you know, you touched on the NBA, and I mean, just even in talking about this with the NBA, it makes these games so difficult to analyze and kind of talk about. I mean, I guess in the case of Barca, you know, because there's not the same kind of proliferation of substitutions. You don't have to worry about the in-game depth in the same way that you do in basketball. So at least we can kind of talk about what the starting 11 more or less would be for that game. But it makes these games so difficult to analyze, because, I mean, this is a unit that we've never seen play together before. I mean, the 11 that you kind of laid out that would probably have to be it if we have to go forward with this game. It's a unit that's never played together before, that we can probably approximate a little bit in our heads what it might look like. But, you know, then you throw it out into the real world and see what actually happens.
Well, I do a little play-by-play. Mm-hmm. So just do the play-by-play here that, you know, I'm going Mingueza on the left side, pushing up left back, finds Puig in the middle, Puig turns, diagonal ball over to Jukla on the right side, Jukla cross in for Luke de Jong, goal Barcelona, right?
Yes.
Like, what if that makes any sense in this season? What if that line of thought or progression, if you will, Mingueza at left back into Puig, diagonal ball to Jukla on the right side, into Luke de Jong for the header goal. What if all of that is going to be relevant to FC Barcelona next year? In 8 months, like, and no disrespect to Jukla, Mingueza, or Puig, who might still be around, but also, that progression, you think Mingueza, Puig, Jukla will ever start a game together, right? They're all like complementary bench options who might play together, like as squad depth players. But
They're sort of like squad guys. I mean, they're all guys who will get, you know, your odd like Copa del Rey and Champions League game or, you know, league games. But no, I mean, this is a complete necessity. They are going to make up some portion of the spine of the team. I mean, it's very much, it's a team for a moment. You know what I mean? Just based on what we're seeing in sports everywhere, like a lot of these lineups are going to be these strange time capsules that we'll look back and just kind of be like, man, that was weird. Like that happened.
And we've been watching the NBA now for 2 years do this weird dance where it depends on the fan base and the team you root for as to how much you put an asterisk next to it. Because right now, like Rayo and Atletico Madrid, mm-hmm. Atletico Madrid is missing João Felix and Antoine Griezmann and their manager, Simeone, the most important person for Atletico Madrid as far as their game plan. And then Rayo is also missing a ton of players. And we also see that
12, I think, right?
Yeah.
I think last I saw was 12.
And we also see that is up in close to double digits or over double digits at this point too. So you have four of the top seven teams like being ravaged by COVID and COVID protocols. So, you know, you do put an asterisk where at the end of the season, the league table won't care which teams had COVID. And they won't care. I mean, the goals of the season remain the same, regardless of who is available. Now, again, if there's less than five players, then you do have to postpone the game. And that could happen, especially for a moneymaker like Barcelona. I think La Liga, and this is with a little bit of privilege, is that I think La Liga is a bit more conducive to have that conversation with Real Madrid and Barcelona, just because of, you know, the sheer attraction of their game, the sheer fanfare around the world, the number of eyes and things like that. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, one of the guys missing. And I think we're done with Mallorca there. So I think one of the final things we're going to talk about today is the Abde situation, which he is now, again, at time of recording, going to play for Spain instead of Morocco. Yeah. And I've seen a lot of hot takes about this. I mean, I have my own opinion of it, but I don't really like the hot takes. And I think there's a bit of, I don't know. What do you think about this one? I mean, I'll let you go first.
So I will admit that I haven't, I've neither sought out nor encountered a lot of the hot takes. I know this is a thing that happens. I mean, in the sense, you know, again, kind of, you know, switching to basketball, like Serge Ibaka plays for Spain internationally. He moved to Spain. He was registered as a Spanish player, but he's from Africa. In my mind, it's, you know, Lionel Messi could have chosen Spain when he was making his choice of international set. It doesn't bother me. I mean, I don't know what are people really up in arms about, because this is kind of a thing that happens with talented young players who have the option of a lesser country, or they can join a more established power.
The question comes about, the frustration comes from timing and potential pressure on the player, in that, I was saying, if he had chosen Morocco, my point was, if Barca's season is resting on whether or not Abde, a guy no one had heard about 4 months ago, misses 12 matches in January, the club is in a much worse place than we thought. If the entire idea of top four rests on Abde's shoulders. But I got how he wanted to be around and fighting for his spot, though. I mean, going could have moved someone else over him in the pecking order. And, I do feel for the decision he had to make. And you'd think that Xavi would have been fair about it. But, you know, they are training, and they are doing in Xavi's second month at the club, you know, building those important building blocks for the club that he might have trouble catching up to. So I totally understand that. And I also want to say, like, from the player's perspective, it's a grueling and awful decision. Here in the U.S., there's a big, huge debate for the U.S. men's national team about Mexican-Americans in particular. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of garbage that's said. But I think Ian Wright had it right, the old Arsenal player. He said that if this was a European team, like where it was Abde deciding whether or not to go from Morocco to the African Cup of Nations, he said if it was a European team, we wouldn't be making him decide between club and country. It wouldn't be a question. If there was an option to go play for Spain, and now Pedri actually, for the Olympics is the one thing, but yet Pedri still went and played for Spain in the Olympics when there wasn't club football. But if there was a question of if the Euro was midseason, or even if they had decided to play through the World Cup in 2022, guys would go. And I know the African Cup of Nations isn't the same, but I mean, it's the equivalent.
I mean, it is to them.
So
it is to the guys who are, you know, to the African players, this is their continental tournament. This is, it's the apex of the game on the continent and, you know, of their homeland. So, I mean, that actually is always just the way the AFCON sort of falls in the middle of the season. And, you know, guys get pressure from their clubs, or, you know, they play in the Cup of Nations and then they come back and they're run ragged from all the travel and all the.
Munir El Haddadi for Morocco, this exact thing happened, and he is not going to feature for Spain. And so for Abde, I mean, to have to choose between a few appearances, maybe for Spain, or play for Morocco, where he'll play likely every window, it would make me sad if he chose this because of the short term needing to stay and making that choice that, oh, my career rests on being at Barcelona in the month of January in 2021. And then only making, you know, two appearances for Spain because Luis Enrique even felt bad that he had whatever it is. But that said, like, I don't know. And so he was born in Morocco, but I think he moved to, I think it was Elche when his family was seven. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of factors as to if he finds himself to be most comfortable in a Spanish national team setup or the Morocco national team setup. So his identity and his identity as, it's not even about his cultural identity. If he's more Morocco and more Spanish, like, that's unfair to do to him. But also, where is he more comfortable playing international football? Like, what setup does he like better? And of course, Spain's training center is better. The field options are better.
The complementary talent is going to be better. You're
playing in Spain. So it's true. If he banks on himself and he's able to make it into that level to be a selection for Luis Enrique Spain, then for sure, like, it totally makes sense for him to go for Spain, even if I think at home more as a Moroccan player.
Oh, totally. So I think there's a couple of things there. One, I mean, I do think that, and we've talked about this in various sort of scenarios about different guys, but I mean, I think anyone who reaches even the fringes of this level of football as a professional, their sense of, I don't know, confidence, arrogance, self-belief, whatever you want to say, is something that we normals would probably find just wholly unrelatable, because simply to get to the place where he's gotten to is an astounding achievement. And so there's a part of me that thinks that, he's probably thinking that, I made it here and I want to make it as a Barca player. He might see this as like that moment, you know, like his pivotal moment to, if I'm going to be a star at Barca, if this thing is going to work out and like this dream is going to come to fruition, this is it. This is the moment. Because also, you know, you don't know if there's any kind of, like you said, if he misses out on some of these training sessions or if he's on the outside a little bit as a result of this, does the positive momentum that he has towards becoming a Barca player and becoming a long-term Barca player, does that fizzle out a little bit? And then is he in a few years just a guy who's on the fringes of the team and maybe looking at a move to, you know, a mid-table Spanish side or, you know, somewhere in England or whatever. So I understand where he might just be looking at this. I don't know what his sort of cultural perspective is as far as how much he feels Spanish, how strong a tie he feels to Morocco. I don't know any of that. So, I mean, it would absolutely suck if his heart kind of belongs to Morocco and he wants nothing more than to be an international star for his country, and professional concerns have kind of swayed him in this decision. He had to, you know, effectively had to make the business decision. At the same time, I mean, that I realize too, I acknowledge that it's entirely possible that he made that decision. I mean, the being a star for Barca or, you know, being a star in Spain might be a higher priority I don't know. I mean, that's a question obviously for him, but I can see the relative merits of either side, and just I just certainly hope he's not heartbroken because he had to pass on Morocco really for things that were, like you said, short term and, you know, not of his choosing.
It could affect the long term, because it is true that if he stayed in January, Dembele is gone, and then Abde is basically, I mean, in the short term, supposed to be the replacement on the field for Ousmane Dembele, who is a World Cup winner for France. And it is true that players for Barca and Real Madrid have a leg up in national team call-ups as well. So he was, I mean, you'd have to think that as long as he stayed in peripheral Barca, he was an automatic call for Morocco, obviously. But for Spain, I mean, if he's playing for Barcelona every year and getting 10 goals or whatever, then he could be a backup for Ozabal on the national team, and he'll get called up. And Spain also plays enough international competitions between the Nations League and international friendlies and Euro and World Cup. I mean, he'll get some time occasionally. He'll get windows, and his team, Bobby, has proven that there's a level that Luis Enrique is looking for. And again, there is some synergy and continuity that Germany at the 2014 World Cup showed us that if you can take six players from a club team and put them in a national team, they have a level of chemistry that just makes it better. And Spain,
well, it's like Spain and, you know, 08 to 12 was, I mean, it wasn't one club, but it was two clubs that essentially spent those 5 years in, you know, getting to know one another as best you could in a series of rock fights. So, I mean, it was everybody was completely, you know, completely familiar and completely attuned with the mannerisms and the personalities. So I do think that, particularly given the way that the young guys, you know, I mean, the young and old, but the way the Barca team comprises such a significant part of the Spanish team, this would put him on the inside track. And if he is able to, if he plays well and he's able to maximize his ability and his potential, he could be a prominent player in the Spanish team. You know, I mean, you know, maybe not the A1 superstar, but he could be a fixture in the Spanish setup for a particular period of time. And, you know, presumably that is, you know, I mean, he's on an inside track to that at Barca in a way that he wouldn't be at whatever Espanyol or, you know, right. I mean, even like Sevilla, Valencia, the other relatively large Spanish teams.
And and Spain wingers, it's not that deep. I mean, you have Ansu, yeah. Ironically, you have Ansu and Ferran Torres.
Right.
then Orzabal, of course. But then after that, now you're talking, oh, well, where does Dani Olmo play? Where does Pablo Sarabia, who's getting up there long in the tooth? So, yeah, I mean, there could be chances for him. Okay. Last thing, Emil, for you. Earlier this week for the website Urban Pitch, you wrote a piece on Barça Femení. The link is down there in the description, so you can read that, check that out. But I don't want to give it all away, but what was one thing that surprised you while researching the piece?
So I think I had heard just in passing in other articles, I'd read some of the stuff about how, particularly in the last, I guess you could say dozen years, but really over the last decade, the women's youth setup at Barça, and now, you know, there's nine young, you know, women's players, youth players who are actually living at the La Masia Academy. Mm-hmm. And what really interested me was just the breadth of talent that has come through over the past, I mean, really the last 6-7 years, but also the similarity between Barça Femení and the Barça men's sides that dominated Europe. And it's almost like this ideal mix of international superstars, but also with this unmistakable spine of homegrown talent, and the way that they are committing new talent. And, you know, young players are getting debuts and they are putting up, you know, quality performances. So it's, you know, we all know kind of, you know, Martins or Hermoso, and, you know, they're not Barca products. I mean, even we could say like Alexia Putellas, she played at, you know, she played youth for Barca for a year, but she played for 4 years at Espanyol and then debuted at Espanyol and then came back and became, you know, just this world beater. But it's just really fascinating to me the way that they've crafted the team. And but there does seem to be so much of a priority on homegrown talent. And it's a commitment to, and, you know, one of the points that I made was if/when the money in the women's club game becomes, you know, even not astronomical the way it is in the men's game, but when it grows by a factor of 3, 5, 10, whatever it is, it'll be interesting to see how much that commitment to this ultra successful and, you know, this deeply committed and very successful youth development system, how much that commitment persists. Because, you know, we can say like with the Barca men's team, we've seen that as the money got bigger and, you know, now granted it was a particular administration too, that went with a really misguided full-blown like Galactico approach rather than, but what interested me was the template and the resulting massive domination in Europe seems very similar to what the men's team did in, I mean, probably even from like kind of the late 90s, but definitely the early aughts, that paid massive dividends through the middle of the last decade. So, I mean, that was actually a really interesting takeaway. And then on an unrelated note, what was interesting was my granular knowledge of the history of the Barça Femení, especially going back kind of before, you know, 04, 05 or something, was wasn't super significant, just how modest the beginnings really were. And, you know, they were only absorbed into the club in 2002. And I mean, they were effectively, and even for the first 3 years or first 2 years that they were actually a section of FC Barcelona, they were in the second division.
Yeah.
And they came back to, and then they were subsequently relegated again in the late aughts. So, I mean, they were very much, I mean, they didn't win the league until the end of the last decade. I mean, it was, it's not, when you think of, you would assume that there was just the, especially just in Spanish women's football, you would assume that there's been so much, you know, resources and everything that comes with FC Barcelona, you would think that it's just been this like death machine for 30 years. But it really is the story of the past dozen years or so that came with joining FC Barcelona, and then, but also effectively committing to developing talent in-house and not just chasing international talent.
Well, you can shorten that line since professionalism in 2015-16.
Yeah, well, that's where, that was another huge...
Right, that's the big change. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, you talked about the Femenino just did not really succeed. I mean, they didn't relegated a number of times. Even Layla...
Well, they started winning leagues kind of just before the professionalization, so it was kind of when Alexia came back. I think it was like 12 or 13.
2011, I think, 2012 is when she debuted.
For, yeah, I think it was 11, 12 when she came back. So then they won two straight leagues after that. And then it's just sort of, then professionalization came and then it all just kind of has kicked on from there.
Well, yeah, you mentioned Layla, the left back, where she went to Valencia. And at the time, Valencia was not a better even spot for her, but a better place for her to, in theory, win, because both and Valencia had a similar chance to win. And now you just look at the huge chasm between the two, and things, you know, change very quickly. And yeah, I think it is this weird thing that I try to do where I want to not, I mean, obviously it's easy to champion the Femenino team, but it's one thing to champion them, but it's also one thing to think that this is always, and they say it themselves. So listen to the players themselves. Like Meli Serrano is the one player to listen to, I think, more than almost anybody else, because she has been through all of it. Melanie,
she's been there for like 18 years.
19, yeah. And it's yeah. And you have 530 unofficial appearances, 500 official appearances for the club. She has seen the worst of it. And the majority of Melanie Serrano's career at Barcelona was when, you know, she was changing in cars and just, you know what I mean? And just having
to
make it as a professional and not know if she was going to get not even paid, but not know if the amount that her salary was worth in the second division of non-professional football in 2009 or whatever it was, it was going to be sustainable for life. And so it is crazy to think, yeah, the difference between then and now. And yes, it's a compliment, but it also comes with and everybody here knows that I'm a history guy. And so one of the reasons I love Barca is because Barca don't want to forget their history and don't want to forget the fact that they fought against, you know, they fought against the oppression of what the Spanish league was trying to do to them and trying to completely erase the club in the 20s and 30s. So like you, Barca will always hold on to its history. So it's also, you have to hold on to the part where the Femenino for a long time, you know, deserved a bit more resources and support that they received.
Yeah.
And now that they have it all, I mean, they're immediately on the top of the world. I mean, it's happened overnight.
You're seeing just what an astounding, I mean, just the, and still, you know, relative to the men, the resources that the women get are so small. And
but they're comfortable enough to dominate Europe.
You see how astounding the results are. Just the system itself and the players. I mean, so much credit just goes to these women themselves who are so freaking good. And, but not just good. You and I have spoken about them. Like they play the game in, you know, it is kind of like those peak sort of 09 to 11, like the men's teams where the winning was almost ancillary to playing spectacularly for 90 minutes. And maybe you'd score four, maybe you'd score eight or whatever it was, but it was more so the maximizing those 90 minutes of playing well rather than sort of, you know,
well, it did get
of course they want to win.
Well, reading it did make me think and compare where even you didn't even mention Mapi Leon, who I thought is, I mean, it was one of my favorite defenders from the last few seasons, but now with Irene Paredes, who's come in, Mapi Leon, I'm going to Leganés, and really a shock move because I figured she'd be around for a little bit while longer, but no, indeed she's moving on. But that said, I do actually compare it to the men's team and wonder, you know, Patri is only still 23 years old. Atana is, Banmati is still only 25. And I mean, Alexia is Alexia, you know, she's the best player in the world. She exists, but I wonder where, you know, your Barca is going to, especially they put financial resources, they're going to be able to get the next Martins, and they're going to be able to get the next Ashuala, and they're going to potentially be able to get the next Hermoso, though she is, again, arguably the greatest forward in all of Spanish.
Yeah, I mean, she's a one-off herself. Right. Yeah, she's
one of one. But in the case of Aitana and Patri, how is Barca going to sustain that level of player, right? Like, it's one thing in your article to say that they're going to come from the academy, but I actually wonder if Patri, just like Busquets and Iniesta and Xavi, if Aitana and Patri are almost one of ones, that this is a generational thing where how are the Femini going to hope to collect this much talent, both internally and then also supplement that with Caroline Graham Hansen and Martins and the transfer from outside that you get for big money that other clubs can't afford. And you find out you're really remarkable players from your own system. So that's a fun question for the Femini, I think, to have to answer in the next 5 years.
Yeah, because
I want to be patient with the question.
Totally agree. Because, I mean, if you look at the men's teams, and I kind of touched on it a little bit in the article, was, you know, the dream team was, you know, very notably, it wasn't the first crop from La Masia, but it was the first sort of, you know, hugely successful crop. And it was obviously headlined by Pep Guardiola. And it was anchored by the superstar non-Spaniards, non-Catalans. It was Romario and Stoichkov and Laudrup and, you know, Koeman and, you know, Ronaldo and, you know, the cavalcade of Brazilians that's come through and everything else like that. But there were always, you know, sort of when Barca hit their greatest peak. So, you know, you talk the dream team and you talk about kind of the 06 to 11, you know, that it was, there was always a superstar that was not of the academy and, you know, in many cases, not of Spain. But if you looked, it was the foundation was emphatically homegrown. And yeah, and like you said, you don't just go pluck another Xavi Iniesta midfield, you know, Xavi Iniesta Busquets midfield, just, you know, from the garden and just like pop that one in when the first one gets old. But it's a good thing to aspire to, at least. You know, I mean, you can kind of acknowledge that you've caught lightning in a bottle a little bit, or this is a particularly singular and special moment. And maybe don't expect it all the time and don't give up on the plan and don't turn on the players who aren't able to emulate that. But it's a very worthwhile thing to aspire to. And I mean, at the very least, I mean, shoot, why not try to replicate it? I mean, you might not acknowledge that, but there are worse goals.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're a good team. They're a deep team. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of young players. Again, Patri is only 23. And you're talking about Jana Fernandez and Claudia Pina and the other young, and Bruno Filamala and the other young players who are pushing through. And,
yeah.
not to take Patri's spot, but okay. So I think that wraps it up. Again, you read that article down in the description below. Mm-hmm. So you can also follow Emil on social media. Just hit Emil down in the show notes and you'll find where he's at. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod, Hilton D13 for me. Facebook group, the Barcelona Podcast, answer those questions, I let you in. And then Patreon is how we keep making these shows, financial incentive, all the stuff, all the goodies that you know are over on Patreon, these shows without the ads. And then we are on YouTube with match reviews. I also have, I want to send people in the direction of the YouTube channel, a full explainer about who Ferran Torres is, his strengths, his weaknesses, some stats for you, some graphics, some lineups with him. A lot of goodies over there about Ferran Torres. So it's a whole thing about Ferran Torres in a nice little YouTube video with pictures, as they say. So, for the rest of you, though, thanks so much for listening to the audio version of this. This is the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barca.
Forza Barca.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.